It is episode 121. Today we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to start with news. We're going to carry on a little bit about, you know, industry 4.0. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the guy here who wrote the book. We're going to bring that up a few times for sure. I'm Michael Askins, architect and technologist, and this is IT Pro Tech Talk. Hey, what's up, Chris? How you doing today?
Good, Mike. How are we doing?
We're doing great. It's been a busy day job week, and you're out, right? You're off.
I am. We're recording from a secret location in the woods of New Hampshire. So
can't beat that. Nice part of the country, and if you can get the time, do it.
I did have to take a work call today, though.
Always happens, right?
You know it.
Yeah, so those longtime listeners will remember the sidecar Dev. He's hasn't been on in quite a spell. The day jobs got him spinning a lot. So I'll be taking a couple days off here soon because tip the hat to him. He's tying the nuptials finally. We talked about it for a while. He was So next week he's making it permanent, and we talked about getting him back in the fold here as things start to settle down. So. Familiar face will be resurfacing, and So we want to do a quick news roundup, right? Looking at the show notes earlier, I'm thank you. You populated some good topics there. can I reorder one of them though? Because
go for it, man. Yeah. Anything I think these are all interesting stories. Actually, there's a ton of news right now. I think it's all coming out of the conferences we talked about last time, right? So go for it. What do you got?
Entra, I got to bring it up.
The polarizing topic of the week, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So, everybody was kind of like, throwing gang signs and setting themselves on fire, running in circles. And what's the reality here? I mean, you and I both know the reality. The reality is this just a branding exercise, or is this just another way to change license model?
Yeah, I think people look at it that way, right? And it's interesting. It's challenging for us internal folks that run into, the changing of names and capabilities and stuff like that. And, a colleague on the modern work side, he explained it best, for one of our customers in a conversation, and just that if we kept the same old name, then added a bunch of features and functionality, it kind of gets away from the core product as it lived. Yep. And so as we add a bunch more capability, and yes, change the licensing model, but only as it's applicable, A, to remain competitive, and B, to provide, the best service possible. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense in a way. Crazy frustrating for people. I get it. And again, challenging for us internally even. I'll say AAD or Active Directory for probably another year or so before it actually clicks in my brain, right? So, but at the same time, it's like, come on, guys, do we really need to get this upset about these things?
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So where I start getting a little frazzled, if you will, is when they make a fundamental change to something that's out there from a licensing perspective, but I don't see the perceived benefit of that move. And I haven't seen that in a while, right? The last time I saw something like that was when they started restructuring the Power Platform, the Power Apps licensing a little bit. There were some people who were like, oh, we've invested in this and now we're going to have to pay more for what we've done already to maintain the same function. So that's when, and it's not like I get bent about it. It's we hear a lot as partners, we customers getting bent about it. So, we have to kind of say, okay, these products are usually bundled with some of the things that you have already. And if we want to continue that R&D, it's got to come from somewhere. Right. So that's typically how I make that justification. But for those who are kind of not familiar with what Entra is, it's again, Entra has been around for a little while, right? Because it's had some things bundled inside of it, ways to handle identity and access. It was there, right? So there's the parallels for what you'll see. And I started talking to customers the day this was released public. And I actually had a little script I wrote up to kind of verbalize this, right? So your Azure AD Premium P1 is now Entra ID P1. And when you got it with your E3, you're getting Entra IDP 1 with your E3. No change, right? So don't set yourself on fire.
Everybody has a pen and paper so you can keep track of all this.
Yep. Well, I'm gonna put a LinkedIn article. So if you're not following my LinkedIn, follow my LinkedIn. I'm gonna put a little quick table out there for you. If you have Azure ADP 2, you're now Entra IDP 2. It used to come with E5. The IDP 2 will come with your E5. No loss of functionality. You're still there. You're good. And
actually, added capability, right? Isn't there better integration with security suite and stuff now too?
There is. Yeah. There were ties in with P2 starting to surface. There were some preview customers we had on some preview stuff, but because of this whole shift, you are getting a few extra things. But if you are leveraging P2 and you're using like crazy conditional access stuff and you need that P2, that functionality is not going to go away. You're still there. It's just called something else. And then external identities, the AZAD, we used to call it AZADEI, which is a mouthful, but that's your Azure Active Directory external identities. That's just called Entra external ID. So again, those things have some enhancements and some things around them that are going to make them even better. And then when you start looking at like, you know, B2C, B2B, and some of the things that go along with the management of those IAM solutions, Entra is kind of that's your entry point into all that, right? And we have a lot of customers doing that stuff now. And I think with the Defender suite, coupling all the different Defender products under a Defender brand, coupling all the IAM stuff under the Entra brand actually makes sense. So
it makes and hopefully over time, as people get used to the new naming and stuff, they can kind of, you know, just be more comfortable with the changes and stuff, you know. I mean, that's I think the ultimate goal.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to talk to that one because one, that's the one I'm most familiar with. But number two, it's you know, it's farm fresh. It was just released just, you know, a little bit ago. They had a big identity kickoff, a big Entra meeting online event. So it's definitely good that's happening. So stay tuned to that space. Now where you know a lot of the GPT stuff, let's I'm gonna toss it to you for GPT-4.
Yeah, and truthfully, you know, the full list of capabilities, I just don't even have my arms around yet. Actually, it's probably a good topic for another discussion here around my YouTube channel coming back to life a little bit. You know, but ultimately, you know, GPT-4 was released by OpenAI as you know, part of the ChatGPT service. However, it's only available to their paying customers right now. Ultimately, they are going to release it, you know, in the preview form, that ChatGPT using the GPT 3.5 model. It's GPT-3, but there is no official 3.5. And so they're using that still. But, you know, as the paying customers now consume it, as well as, you know, when they get into the developer mode, if you will, for releasing it, everybody will have access to it. So, you know, some of the big things just off the top of my head are really around the scale and capabilities and processing power. It's a purely more efficient model the way that it runs, and it handles a lot more input text. You know, I think we were limited before to like a couple thousand characters, and now it's like 50,000 characters or something like that. I mean, it's quite different, you know, and it adds a lot more support for, you know, sort of larger responses as well as larger requests. And, you know, as I mentioned, it runs a lot faster than the old model. So anybody who's used to using, you know, the current ChatGPT, you know, and I wouldn't call it slow by any means, but they do hit resource constraints and things like that. So if you go to log in, you aren't paid a paid subscriber, you're going to, I wouldn't say often, but you're going to commonly hit that point where you start to see, it's unavailable, right? The service is too busy. We can't help you right now. Check back in a little bit kind of thing. So that was pretty exciting. And you know, maybe we can, you know, add a little more detail, a little more color around this in the near future, maybe.
For sure.
And that's, I guess, I'll loop in, you know, sort of, my goal here is to start getting out more content again. I want to do a couple videos a month. I published one a couple weeks back now about the differences between ChatGPT from OpenAI and the Azure OpenAI service, which we talked about here on the pod. But I go into a little more detail around the different models, you know, some of the pricing things, some of the security stuff and whatnot. So that was good to get sort of back on the horse. And then I was able to record just another video this week with a little bit of downtime. And so I'm going to put together some videos around the book, really. You know, a buddy of mine suggested, he's like, well, you know, you wrote this great book, you have all this great information and detail, you have all the step-by-step instructions in the book, as well as being able to download the code. Why not show it on the screen, right? I mean, you know, you've got a good following on YouTube. So yeah, so that'll be out, you know, within the next day or two here after I finish the video editing process. You know, and so I like I said, I hope to keep going on that a little bit, which is great. And then the other really exciting thing for people is now Meta has managed to release an application that beat the ChatGPT timeline for 100 million users. For anybody who hasn't heard and lives under a rock, Meta released Threads, and it's a little confusing because sometimes you see Meta release it, sometimes you see it from Instagram. It's still not totally clear to me what the difference is and why it matters, but they, you know, they market it different ways. But so, you know, this is a flat out Twitter competitor. Apparently it's been in the works for a while, from things that I read. And you know, with Twitter having some challenges, we'll say, you know, losing more than half their staff, a new CEO, well, two new CEOs in what, the last 6 months, 8 months, whatever it is. You know, plus they put some throttling limits in place. They
600 open. Like, what is that?
So what was 600, what, per day or something, that you can only view 600 tweets per day or something. Which to me, that sounds like a lot, but I'm not like on social all the time like some people. So I don't know. I don't get into like the flame wars and all that kind of stuff. I post information, you know, I put up plugs for my book and my YouTube channel, you know, where I'm speaking, all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, and then, yeah, we're just past the first month as of yesterday of when the book was really, oh, sorry, second month as of yesterday. Things are going great. It's, selling very well. People are really loving the book. We're getting some great feedback on through the Amazon page. You know, and so really appreciate all those folks
I owe you a review on there.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'll bug you about that again, because wants them for me, of course. But yeah, no. If you get a chance, Practical Guide to Azure Cognitive Services, where we talk about OpenAI and ChatGPT and all of the easy buttons, as I like to call them, for AI, which is all of those APIs that we can touch and just pull into our applications, you know, very, very quickly. So, you know, go buy it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I'll post some on some of our pages that I post on. I'll put some links out there again, as well as some of the new content you put out there. I always am one of the first, you know, one of the first numbers that watch it, because it's so informative. You know, along that line, it's like I scratch my head and you know, I want to put out some short form content, and I'm like, I'm not going to do it on TikTok. Just not happening. Not going to happen.
Yeah, so it seems weird to me. I don't know why.
It does. It does. But I was looking, and I was talking with someone about shorts, YouTube shorts, and that might make a good alternative. The problem with shorts is it's like really, really short, right? So, you know, Meta Threads, I'm not a face space kind of a person, but I mean, I have it, and I, you know, I use it for more family stuff. What you mentioned earlier about the Instagram slash, well, the developers for Instagram made it, and I think if it's monetizable, they're going to do that. But there's 5 minute videos that you can do there. So I'm trying to say, where should I put short form for the stuff we're trying to get out? You know, is it, you know, I'm not going to do it on Twitter because I see less and less activity around Twitter. It's become more charged. Let's just leave it at that. You know, so all these different areas, we want to get the, you know, the book information out. We want to get, you know, the links to your show, to your content out. I got short form. So what does that landscape look like? It's crazy, right?
It really is. You know, and so, you know, as part of the book promotion and stuff, you know, you try to learn about the best way to get the word out there, right? Because the publisher just isn't going to do a whole lot for you, you know, and that's pretty common from people I talk to. You know, you write a book and you think that they're going to promote it, but you know, that's kind of half-baked. They don't as much as you'd like. They've been great to work with, so I don't want to, like, I don't want anybody to think that, you know, Pact isn't a great publisher. They were excellent to work with, and they really you know, pulled us through the writing process and got it out there. And I think it's a great production, right? And so it, there's that, but then there's the, you know, they're silly little nuances that drive me a little crazy with my type A. So, you know, I just got to get over it at some point here.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're in that, when you're in that Coliseum, you got to use the tools to fight that are available to you, right?
You got it. You got it, man. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, going back and forth, I mean, you create a LinkedIn page for the book, you create a Facebook page for the book, you know what I mean? You just have all these different avenues, and it's like, okay, how do you put content out there? Who has time for all this? I got to find like a social media manager or something to do it for me. You know? It's like, so anyway,
hey, I know one if you need one. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Excellent.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Well, I know when we do news, we tend to, I do anyways, I sprawl a little bit. So let's get back in. Let's go to our main topic here and our main content. You want to kick us off?
Yeah. You know, it's awesome, right? Cause we're following up from, you know, where we're going with this industry 4.0, discussion, right? So this is definitely a long form, you know, and this is the first of what we, you know, anticipate being probably 5, 6, 7 videos, depending on, in podcasts, depending on, you know, how much content we want to put out there, you know, and hopefully along the way, we have a special guest or two as well. But, you know, when we talk about Industry 4.0, you know, I thought a great place to start would be, how do we define Industry 4.0? What, you know, what makes it Industry 4.0? What are we actually talking about, right? And so, you know, I thought just simply a definition would be a good place to start, right? Yep. And so this seems to be a generally acceptable definition is, you know, Industry 4.0, and we're talking about it as a concept, it's really that cyber and physical transformation of our manufacturing and supply chain management that was, you know, that has this combination of not just IoT, because I think that's where everybody's brain goes, but it's really like a transformation of all of your systems, right? So it's getting information technology plugged in with the operations team. It's all about the interconnectivity that goes, like I said, beyond just the IoT, but it's you know, understanding from machine to reporting to alerting to, you know, people movement and all those types of things. You look at sort of the ability to use automation. And so if you're so sophisticated to be able to use things like robots and those types of things, you want to manage and monitor their health and make sure that your, you know, your operations are running as smoothly and efficiently as possible. Right. And so, you know, those are the types of things that we get from the automation. And of course, all of this data produces a great opportunity to do some machine learning on that data, you know, pull through some of that information and then be able to implement things like predictive analytics to be able to reduce the downtime for machinery, predictive maintenance and those types of things. And then, you know, finally, of course, being able to monitor that in real time, whether you're monitoring your equipment, you're collecting data for just pure analysis, helping out with some of the analytical reporting of what's happening, as I mentioned, the predictive maintenance, and of course, you know, understanding the health of those IoT sensors using things like digital twins to make sure that you're going to stay running.
Absolutely. Digital twins is, I love the concept and I love it being deployed in practicality because there's so much you can do with, you know, getting an understanding, like you're mentioning, it's more than just, you know, the IoT layer. And, you know, I've had during the day job with Jeff, Ditmore, he's, you know, runs advisory services for one of our key sponsors, Solutions for Networks. He and I are constantly talking about IT, OT, and IoT, and what do those right. boundaries look like? Because they're three discrete networks, and what goes on them sure. have different requirements. And how right. do you manage them the best? How do you leverage getting information in and out of them the best way to have that competitive advantage as a manufacturer or being in whatever industry you're making, whatever you're doing, whether you're making, you know, ingots of aluminum or steel, or you're making widgets, you know, the concepts of IT, OT, and IoT are more relevant now than ever, especially from a security perspective. But the point you make is what's often missed. And the good news is like with Jeff and I, we talk about, okay, what's beyond that? You know, you got your application tier and your data tier and those things. It's not just hardening and having them available. It's how do we best leverage modern technology to be as efficient as possible to have a competitive advantage as an organization, you know?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And it really is an evolution, right? You know, we think about things like the evolution of the late 1800s, right? The Industrial Revolution, you know, where we went to a lot of this more of a machinery approach to be able to produce goods much, much faster. And really, when you think about it, Industry 4.0, there's a reason it calls Industry 4.0, right? We had various versions of Industry 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. And now we're looking at really... sophisticated machinization and electrification and automation, right? By using as a core our IoT devices, and that falls into its own category in this space called industrial IoT, so IIoT, which is, you know, a core differentiator. I mean, if you're on the one hand using an IoT based thermostat, for instance, right, to make sure you're balancing the amount of energy you're using and things like that, that's great. You know, those are used for personal uses as well as maybe like an office space or something like that. Yep. But what we're talking about here is you know, hundreds and sometimes thousands of sensors, you know, within equipment, to be able to monitor every single aspect of that equipment. It kind of reminds me of one of the chapters in the book when we talk about anomaly detection. And, you know, so if you've got a freezer in a facility that's keeping goods cold or even just a cooler refrigerator type environment, there's so many factors that can cause spoilage, cause downtime, and that's all expensive. That all costs money to these manufacturers, right? And so when you bring in IIoT, so you can monitor fan speed, temperature control, a door opened or closed, exterior temperature, as that all gets factored in, then you can start to look in patterns and say, okay, how can we reduce this even more? Or on the other hand, reduce downtime because we blow a compressor or a fan or something like that, right? And so you know, it's all of that gets pulled in. And then, you know, like I said, with bringing in robots and automated vehicles for moving stuff around the shop floor, you go to a whole new level.
Yeah. And imagine a world where you already have that telemetry and say you make a copy of it, say a digital twin of it, and then you can right. tweak various aspects that you can control in that environment to say, okay, I understand that the mean time, the failure for this bearing, running this fan, keeping the ice off the compressor to keep everything working right is 360 days, which it's not, it's just random numbers. But if we replace it at day 350, when we're doing a Freon change, look at all the savings we have. And what happens if we drop it a half a degree overnight when the doors aren't opening and closing as much, you know, like what do we, those kind of modeling that you can do in the digital world is, it seems like it's far-fetched, but it saves real tangible assets in the form of dollars, right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's again, depending on the size of your organization, you know, what kind of budget you have and stuff like that, there are the real simple versions of this, you know, kind of roll your own, build out your own solutions using some basic devices, you know, to at least improve you know, that capability internally. And as I like to say, you know, is that Anytime that IT can bring value to the business, whether it's cutting costs or increasing revenue or reducing risk, it's a win for IT, right? So even if you start somewhere on a small scale, get that snowball effect, get it rolling downhill, build momentum, and really go for those, the full suite platforms that are available out there, again, through various partners with Microsoft, to be able to kind of build this out, have it all sit in Azure, have all your management and maintenance sitting right there.
Yep. And, harden it with the best of breed security, Gartner upper right corner. There's some Microsoft products sitting up there. It's beginning cradle to grave, right? Start to finish, you have solutions that you can roll out. So when we define it, like that's a great way to put your arms around it. It's a great way to talk to your every business person to understand it. Now, from a technologist perspective, we started going a little deep with, digital twins and IIoT, and touching on smart manufacturing, right? Looking through our notes and what we've aggregated together. So, one of the things, and both of our backgrounds has some data around it. What does that look like when we're defining modern analytics? Is there different things we need to look at for 4.0 versus previous ways?
Yeah, I mean, use the term smart manufacturing, and that is commonly what we're talking about when we talk about Industry 4.0. It's much bigger than just manufacturing, right? And that's somewhat of a common misconception, because you can use Industry 4.0 for supply chain management, and understanding where your goods are, working with your partners as well as your customers, to help them manage all that too, right? But when we look at all of this ability to now capture the data from the shop floor, everything that's happening on that shop floor, it just gives us that much better information to make the right decisions about what we're doing. I'll use a supply chain example where we know we're running low. And I mean, that's nothing new. We've talked about this. We're watching our bin of plastic pellets that we're creating our whatever golf balls with, right? And you're getting to that point where you hit a reorder point, and you go and you call them up and you tell them, hey, we need this, by X date. You get that all figured out, so you get the proper lead time and all that. I mean, that's all been happening for a long time, just in time manufacturing. One of the big differences is a lot of it was being done manually, right? You had people manually watching inventory levels, or doing some kind of reconciliation from inventory and things like that. And we can get away from more of that manual process by being able to leverage the data that we're getting. And really, when you think about, we've been talking about digital transformation for probably what, 20 years now. I mean, the term was coined, but really, this is sort of that last phase of the digital transformation for a lot of organizations, because by collecting all that data, by having that good quality, clean, curated, trusted data, now is when you can start building those machine learning models of your own and having custom models that can become somewhat of a differentiator and somewhat part of the secret sauce for your business.
Yeah, absolutely. And the tooling is there to make it so too, right? That's the thing is sometimes when these concepts came about, I should say the tooling is there for every org. The every org can handle taking on some of this technology without the massive fork truck upgrades of piles of racks and piles of servers. Okay, it's in the cloud, but it's only affordable because it's so expensive. It's not like that anymore with a consumption model of cloud and how you pay for what you use model all the way through, consumption tiers where you have dedicated resources. There's a tier for every organization to benefit from this. There might be a small org listening to us out there that builds, plastic widgets for widget company B, and they're like, oh, this is out of reach for us because we're just a small medium company. These tooling that is available for the biggest manufacturers in the world is available to you too, and it doesn't cost as much for them because you're not going to be using it the same way and as much as them, right?
And that's a great thing about cloud. You know, for all those guys out there saying that cloud is a fad, you know, and stuff like that, I think we've surpassed that at this point. But there are some naysayers. You know, we are technologists. We all do have those, you know, sometimes fixed mindsets, right? but I would say, you know, when you think about the way that it scales, is that it's all based on consumption. It's all based on compute. I mean, devices are cheap. You know, you can buy a Raspberry Pi for like $25 on Prime Day or whatever, right?
They're back up to 50, by the way.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Well, you can still go get a Raspberry Pi 3. You don't need the latest and greatest, right? I mean, all you're doing is monitoring fan speed. So but you know, I mean, and that's the great part, right? Is that you have access to all this capability, you know, whether it be high performance compute, whether it be IoT devices, managing, monitoring, all of the analysis, all of the data collection. It's all scaled based on whether you're a very small shop or a very large shop, and depending on what your requirements are. It gives us that ability to not have to make a major capital investment in all of this equipment to make this work, right? It can happen very, very slow and very effectively if you put the right process to it.
Yeah, for sure. So from the designing of a product collaboratively across, you know, oceans with HoloLens and having data available next to developers, wherever you may be, work remote, work in a giant office by using things like Azure DevOps and GitHub, you name the tooling from inception. And then once you go into practicality, we're just spreading that same mindset that we're going to be efficient. We're going to find ways to do things. Now, you mentioned something that clicked in my head a little while back about supply chain. Lean has been around for a while. There's a lot of methodologies for supply chain. There's also the Toyota methodology where we're going to backstock X months of like the pandemic. We saw car manufacturers didn't have processors. We couldn't get processors for switches. You know, the Toyota methodology, like there's different methodologies that you can use to do that. But what one of the things that I'm seeing in this newer model, newer way of looking at manufacturing and in industry is, okay, we have supply chain with all their goodness and modernization. We have manufacturing with all their goodness and modifications and being on the edge now. They're linking each other together. So they're saying, okay, right, our raw goods will be on ship, on container, on this time. And it's not that manual, like here's the spreadsheet and we got to look it up. It's like real time, nanoseconds from one tenant to another tenant saying, updating when right, things are going to be there so that they can schedule the machinery to run at that time. It's coming in. The pellets are getting sucked out of the container ship, put on a truck, sucked into a vacuum. Your part coming out. It's like, there's no wait, you know?
Right. Well, and the great part is it strips out a lot of the waste, right? The majority of it by far. Yep. It frees up workers to maybe focus their efforts on other projects, right? You know, and really what this is giving organizations the ability to do is completely transform their businesses, not just from a digital standpoint, but it allows them to be much more nimble in nature. It gives them the capability to switch gears as quickly as they need to. Yep. You know, we think about COVID, right? And you know, people went from alcohol distillers to hand sanitizer distillers. I mean, that stuff that smelled like tequila. Oh, still can't get it out of my head. It was awful, right? You see a lot of those types of examples, you know, where people were very, very quickly able to pivot their business. And it's because they had sort of this nimble nature. They had the investments made where they are able to, turn the business on a dime, and it gives, you know, organizations all of that capability and still remain operationally excellent against their competitors.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the other, just a real life use case, just to put in the head that this is available for the every business. There's an organization I know of that they'll remain nameless just because they'll remain nameless. They were making automotive pleated filter parts, and they wound up, you know, pivoting their business to building components to help make, you know, respirators and stuff because there was such a need for it. And I mean, they went for it, and they did not abandon that mindset because they retooled, and then they realized it's like, well, we can retool back because we're back in business. But they're like, well, this is a new line of business for us, right? because we were nimble enough, and we also had the systems in place to quickly, you know, pivot that over. That's what it's about, right? You know, it's about thinking, being creative, not just with how you make your products, but how you actually deliver them too. I mean, I can talk all day about this, and I don't want to beat it into the ground, but it's good stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it, right? And that's why this series is so exciting to me, because it really gives us a lot of opportunity to kind of talk through those real world examples. Having worked in manufacturing for a long time, it's how my brain works, right? I think of everything in a straight line, and how do I get from A to B as quickly as possible? And so, you know, this is just another solution where we're able to do that, and we're able to cut out a lot of that cost and waste. And so, you know, in our next show, you know, we're going to talk about how we transform the workforce as part of this, right? You briefly mentioned HoloLens, right? So spoiler alert, that plays a big part in this. It plays a big part in cutting costs and stuff like that. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of awesome examples. I do think that we need to give a full definition of a digital twin, because I think it's lost on a lot of people. Like, what are we talking about here? You know, so I mean, it's another great example of some of the terminology and concepts that just a little foreign to people. So I think it'll be good for them to have it firsthand.
Yeah, I'm on board. Yeah, I'm just as excited. This is going to be great. I'm glad we're able to kind of take this first step in to introduce it to where somebody might have thought of that series coming up, whatever. But now this, I think, might be the hook that fishing reference, the hook that gets the lip, if you will.
I caught a 2.5 pound smallie yesterday.
So. Oh, see, a little jealous.
she was fighting good. So yeah. It was a good fish.
Yeah, my daughter is like took the fish in like a fish to water. She loves it.
Oh, really?
That's great. Yeah, she just asked me the other day. She's like, "When are we going again? When are we going again?" So we'll get
send her my way. We can go fishing. And my kids don't want to fish with me anymore.
Hopefully they'll come back to you. Don't worry, because mine had that too.
Yeah.
couple housekeeping things I need to bring up right now. So again, you know, you hear me say this usually at the top or the end of a show or in the middle when we start getting really technical. Everything we're talking about today is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes. So, you know, hopefully we make you laugh while we're trying to educate you on some of this stuff. Not everything that we talk about is applicable to you. A lot of it is, but not everything is. And your configuration and how you have things set up will determine the success that you have. So just pulling the trigger saying, I want that doesn't necessarily, there's no easy button. Some things are easy to do, but there's no easy button. Talk to your friendly neighborhood partner, consultant, or like the primary sponsor of the show, Esfernets. Find some way to get some advice on this, even if it's just a conversation with an architect around how do I do this. The lawyers and insurance love when I have that little blurb in there and I'm trying to make it a little bit more pleasing to the ear than me reading that this show is for entertainment. So, but in all seriousness, please reach out. You know, if you have a dedicated Microsoft rep and you're looking at this technology, reach out to them, say, hey, I'm interested in this. Who knows? You might even be able to get some, you know, test funding for some of these things, right? Microsoft's year just started off. So, you know, those funding lanes are opening back up. Not that I'm trying to spend Microsoft's money, but a little bit I am, because if it gets tech out there, you know, it's for the good.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is that, you know, if people just have some quick questions, reach out, you know, happy to engage, happy to have a quick conversation. I've done it many, many times and happy to, right? You know, who's my Microsoft rep? I don't even know, you know,
yeah.
I can try to find somebody, you know, so definitely feel free to reach out.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I do this all the time with, you know, Microsoft reps that I work with as a partner, like, you know, we got a customer who, like, they don't even know. Can you tell me so we can just get them connected? Right. And it's not that they're like asleep at the wheel. It's just there's so much out there. And, you know, it takes a while sometimes to circle through everybody. But if you have an immediate need, they're going to come right away. And also lean on your partner, because they got resources to help you big time with a lot of this stuff. Anything else we want to add to the definition?
I think we're in a good place, right? We covered the areas that we want to go through and explore deeper, right? So we'll talk more about the various capabilities and how these different options are being employed. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and a little spoiler, and this is a non-committal spoiler, but I'm going to try to maybe for the video people get some more graphical stuff, because I don't want you just looking at my big head all the time. We want to get some of this stuff out in front of you. So we have some non-specific graphics, decks, and infographics that might be useful to help get it across to our visual viewers. Audio listeners, if you're on the treadmill, we'll do our best to describe it without putting everybody to sleep. So keep a lookout for that. Keep a lookout for some more promotion around Chris's book. As I mentioned, this series, we are on behalf of our primary sponsor, Solutions for Networks, going to give away a book around this exact topic, or parts of this topic, I should say. We're gonna be putting this out there. I'll tell you at the beginning of the next series episode on how that works. All the details are finalized for that. Keep a lookout for maybe YouTube Shorts. I'm going to try to drop, you know, three things you didn't know about Azure, you know, or here's the link to Chris's book, because it's pretty darn good.
Yeah. Or we just snip pieces of this and we define a digital twin, you know, things like that. I think those would be great things.
Yep, agree with you 100%. That being said, I think we're good for today. You good?
Yeah,
I'm good.
Great stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Good stuff. We thank you as listeners and viewers immensely. I'm sure when you look on YouTube and all that, you see people's gratitude go out sometimes overwhelmingly. It is true, because when we sit here and we put in the effort for this and we want to get this to you, there's a lot of time that takes to make this stuff happen. And when we see those numbers look really good, it makes us feel good that we're trying to make an impact and get stuff out there. So thank you immensely. And we're hoping that the series methodology, so far reviews on what we want to do, looks good. Everybody's anxiously waiting. So stay tuned and we'll see you on the next go around.
Yeah, we definitely didn't. We aren't doing this for the money, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. On that note, I think we're going to sign out here. We'll see you on the next one, right?
See you guys.
All right, everyone.